Break time is over. Spring work is resuming for Ohio State, and the Buckeyes will get back in the practice field on Tuesday. But today is Monday, a new work week on the podcast daily. That is Bill Landis and Jeremy Birmingham. I am Austin Ward. There were a couple pretty big job openings available. One had been that way for a while. That's now been filled. Ohio State basketball has promoted Jake Diebler to be the full-time coach after his successful interim stint that just came up probably 5 minutes, maybe short of the NCAA tournament. And the other, the Buckeyes will carry over into the Woody Hayes Athletic Center on the football field as they try and replace Tony Alford as the running backs coach. But Bill, before we get back into football, let's touch on this decision for Ohio State with men's basketball and Jake Diebler. I am impressed by the way Ohio State finished the season under Diebler, and also surprised that this is the move that Ross Bjork made.
I'm in the same boat. Yeah, really impressed with what Jake Diebler did. Another way of saying it, other than they were 5 minutes away from making the NCAA tournament, is like they were, I don't know, 15 foul calls away from being in the NCAA tournament. But the way that game against Illinois was officiated, it was unfortunately a bad whistle in that game for Ohio State. But they played really well under Jake. And it was Trent. I never really believed that they were going to go in that direction until, I don't know, like a week or so ago, when it just seemed like he had a ton of momentum. Jake Diebler did, especially from like, you know, former players. Which I know Ross Bjork had mentioned a couple of times in interviews, like he was asking players like what they thought of the program, where the program should go, the kind of person that should lead the program. And Jake Diebler had a ton of support among those kind of people, which is incredibly important. It's still not at all what I thought they were going to do. I am still, you know, pretty surprised that we're sitting here with Jake Diebler as the new coach, because I just don't know. I don't know that you make the move that you made to get rid of Chris Holtmann when you did, with the dollar amount that was tied to it at the time, which I guess could change now that Chris Holtmann has a job. You didn't know that when you made the decision to promote an assistant from a staff of the guy that you got rid of. And it's just a really small sample size. And I'll be glad to be wrong about what I think, you know, they could have done instead. If I thought they should have made an outside hire that would have situated Ohio State basketball better for the long term, that's kind of the camp that I'm in. It's not that I think Jake's a bad coach. I don't know that we know enough. It's just really small sample size. And it's a really important job. So it's just not the kind of hire that I thought Ross Bjork could make. I thought he'd make a bigger swing. The other part of it that was surprising to me is it didn't seem like they had like a tremendous amount of interest, maybe from guys that I think would have been considered bigger swings. You saw a few coaches get new deals and raises, I think, out of the Ohio State opening being open for as long as it was, but I don't know how many of them were actually realistic candidates for Ohio State. It sort of seemed like it was very quickly a conversation about Dusty May at Florida Atlantic and Jake Diebler for a pretty long time, I think. And it's just the scope of the search, at least from the outside looking in, also wasn't quite as wide as I thought it would have been. I thought this would have been a more attractive job to some of the bigger coaching names in the sport. But like I said, I like Jake Diebler a lot, and he had a big hand in putting this roster together. He's an incredible recruiter, and he showed some pretty good coaching chops down the stretch. So, you know, who am I to say that he won't be able to get it done? I just didn't think it was going to end up here.
It's hard to say it's not like an underwhelming first move for Ross Bjork. I mean, that's something mm-hmm. that I think has to be considered, but I think a lot of this and the decision comes down to, we're in this new era of college sports where today, Monday, starts the transfer portal for college basketball, which is insane that the transfer portal opens up the week the NCAA tournament starts up. That's almost as dumb as the way they handle things in football, if not dumber.
Dumber, I think that's much worse than college football.
It's pretty stupid. It's pretty freaking stupid. But what you get with Diebler, and I think the hope here has to be that by making this announcement and moving forward with the guy that I would imagine the entire team was supporting and wanting to be the head coach, you hope that it leads to roster retention. Because if it doesn't lead to roster retention, and I think if you look at the way Ohio State played in the last 3 weeks, you can see the makings of a pretty darn good basketball team if they can put in one piece here or one piece there, like adding some big man depth, finding a way to replace Jamison Battle next year. Like, this is a team that has the pieces to be pretty good. You're watching in the NCAA tournament or the Big Ten tournament, and you're watching Ohio State against Illinois. The Buckeyes have two true freshmen and three sophomores on the court against five fifth-year guys for Illinois. Like, this team is still young. It's very talented, and I believe the thought is Jake Diebler can go a long way in retaining them, since he went a long way in bringing them all in. And if he doesn't retain them, then I think this risk becomes a loss pretty quickly, because that is the value of keeping a 37-year-old first-time head coach. On Sunday, both Colin White and Junie Mobley, Ohio State's 2024 signees, told people that they were sticking. They talked to Jake Diebler and decided that they weren't going to look for a release from their letter of intent. So that's at least a win. And I think it's an indicator of where things are going with the roster. But that's really the only reason I can think of that you feel compelled to make this decision now, as opposed to waiting at this juncture another 3 weeks when you could see if someone else decides to take a look at another job once the season is over, because there are a lot of really good coaches out there.
I thought that Jake Diebler was putting a lot of pressure on Ohio State to stop looking at other candidates, but I thought he was still going to have to actually get into the NCAA tournament for there to be enough like exterior pressure, belief from the fan base, like that Jake Diebler had done enough to earn the job. And I don't mean that in any way to slight what he did over the last month. It's pretty remarkable. And you were watching, like, it felt like a completely different basketball team under Diebler than what Chris Holtmann had put together, not even just in the first half of the season, but for the last several years. And he does deserve credit for that. The part that you mentioned, Bill, that I think resonates, is like, well, he was also on the bench when some of this was going pretty ugly. Mm-hmm. And if you're paying $14 million to make Chris Holtmann go away, you're not trying to save money on the back end by just promoting somebody off the bench. That's the part. I don't know how it's going to work out. And this is when you zoom back, not dissimilar move and a not dissimilar sample size to Ryan Day taking over for Urban Meyer. But there was definitely more success when Ryan Day was involved as an assistant for the football program when he got the job, even if he hadn't been there as long or around the program as long as Diebler has for the basketball team. But that's the part that surprises me. That's not a prediction from me one way or the other for how this is going to work out for Jake Diebler next season or in two seasons or in three seasons. Cause I would have been very wrong about the record that Ohio State was going to post under him on an interim basis over the last month. He got so much more out of this team that really changed the whole conversation about him, where I would have thought, definitely a month ago, this was a placeholder so that Ohio State could go spend $5 or $6 million a year on Sean Miller or Nate Oates or Lamont Paris or anybody else.
It was like the transformation on both ends of the floor, the immediate transformation on both ends of the floor was pretty shocking. And like, I think everyone sort of believed that Ohio State always had a good roster. Part of the reason why I fired Chris Holtmann in the middle of the season, because the expectations were higher this year because of that. But I do wonder, I mean, clearly I think Jake Diebler surprised a lot of people with what they were able to do in such a dramatic way so quickly. But like, they were playing like one of the, I think at the time of Chris Holtmann's firing, they were playing like the 120th best team in college basketball. And I think for most of Jake Diebler's tenure, they were playing like the 30th best team in college basketball, something like that, in terms of like efficiency ratings. Like, that is like obviously a massive, massive jump. And it wasn't like they were merely beating up the bottom of the Big Ten when they did it. You know, they beat Purdue. They ended their road losing streak, which was like way too long. So like there were definitely like on-court things that I guess like would make me a little more comfortable with the idea of, you know, the struggles the last 2 years not being indicative sort of like of Jake Diebler's coaching chops, because like he did have them playing differently and more effectively as soon as he took over. Like, he didn't just say like, okay, we're going to run all the same stuff that Chris Holtmann ran and hope that it works, you know, hope we win some games. He did change some things. So maybe that means we should give him a little more benefit of the doubt, even though he was tied to some previous losing seasons. The other part of this thing that is interesting to me is it feels like, to Berm's point, like Ross Bjork, who we were sort of like unsure how much he and Gene might work in cahoots, how much they sort of see things the same way, kind of like continued on Gene's vision for the program here. Like, they made a decision 2 years ago to recruit a big freshman class, kind of build, you know, on the backs of that class, go through some struggles last year. I think expect struggles this year, but be better, and they weren't. And that's why Chris Holtmann got fired. But then they make this move to keep Jake Diebler, I think because obviously they want to keep this roster together. And it's like, it's a continuation of that vision. I think this was always about like, wait till Bruce Thornton and Roddy Gale and Felix Akpar are in their third year and what Ohio State can be. And you have the class of guys behind them that played really well, I thought, toward the end of the season, and the guys coming in that Berm mentioned, like, you could have blown it up. I think in college basketball, I don't want to say it's easy, but I think it's not all that difficult to retool your roster 1 year to the next via transfers and still find a way to be successful. We've seen teams kind of win national championships that way. So like Ohio State could have done that. But so to make the decision to like avoid that, keep this group intact and continue on the view that Chris Holtmann and Gene Smith had two years ago, is kind of interesting to me. I don't know that I would have expected, you know, Ross Bjork to just kind of like be in lockstep with that idea.
I think ultimately, whether or not this is a successful move or an unsuccessful move will come down to how much of the Chris Holtmann like style rubs off on Jake Diebler and how much doesn't. I mean, there's two ways to look at it. Jake Diebler has been an assistant coach at Ohio State for 7 years with Chris Holtmann, and you learn all the things that work for Chris Holtmann, but you also learn the things that don't. And so it's going to be incumbent on Jake Diebler to make sure that he's finding the balance there of creating his own style and building the program in the way that he wants. And sometimes you are the assistant for someone for that long, you get to a pretty intimate knowledge of like, man, if only Coach Holtmann was doing this, then maybe things would be better. And
yeah,
I think that we watched, at least in the last month, we do have a sample of what that looks like on the floor, because I think that the efficiency, as you mentioned, Bill, is completely different. The style of play was different. The pace of play was different. The defensive effort was significantly better. A lot of these things that you can see from watching the performance on the court, but now there's that bigger part, which is like creating and maintaining and sustaining a program is not the same as coaching on a day-to-day basis. I think it's pretty clear, and maybe something that is surprising considering how long Chris Holtmann has now been in this profession. It seems like the Big Ten was just way too big for him as an in-game coach. And Jake Diebler, probably thanks to the fact that he grew up playing basketball in Ohio and his dad's a legendary coach, like, I think he understands the on-court coaching performance stuff better than probably Chris Holtmann did, at least with his current Ohio State roster. So now it's like, how do you build the rest of it? Who's your big hire? Who's the guy you go out and find to be the assistant that you were? Those are the things that are going to make or break this decision, I think, because the ability to relate to the players is obvious. The things we saw on the court, the improvements we saw on the court, seem pretty clear. And now the next part is, how do you build a program? And he's got a 5-year deal, so the Buckeyes clearly believe that he's the guy to do it. It won't take long to figure that out. I mean, we'll see if the team comes out and plays with a little, like, you know, take a deep breath and exhale in the NIT if they decide to even play in it, which I imagine they will. Why would you not keep the momentum going? So it's going to be an interesting first year for him, because that's the hard part, is how do you build an actual program? Not coaching on the game day is easy.
All right, so that big hire is done by Ohio State. Now they need to make one to fill out the full-time coaching staff for football again. We talked about that late last week, the seismic move there from Tony Alford to go across the lines up north to Michigan. And now there's a practice on Tuesday and no running backs coach at this moment. Bill, I don't know that I've ever seen this happen, and I have no idea how it's going to be managed.
No, neither do I, because we also learned last week that Riley Larkin, who was Tony Alford's, I guess, what do they call it? Was he a GA or was he like a program assistant or analyst? I'm not entirely sure.
Position assistant, right?
Yeah,
Assistant to the assistant
moved to the quarterback room. So I guess maybe he could go back to running backs. And I'm sure there is another person who was helping the running backs. I just don't know who that is off the top of my head. I don't know. It'll be really interesting to see.
Tony Johnson was there.
Larry's son. That's right. Yeah. So yeah. Welcome, Tony. You're the new running backs coach.
Yeah. So I don't, and that's the other part. That is a new person into the program. And I believe he was a wide receiver and not a running back coach, not a running back, and not even really a full-time or temporary assistant of any form or fashion until coming in to get his career started at Ohio State. So I don't think that can be the solution.
No, nor do I. Maybe in the interim, while you're waiting to see who Ryan Day hires, Ryan Day can get his hands a little bit more in the quarterback coaching and Chip Kelly can go coach the running backs, maybe. Like Chip Kelly, I think, has coached like every position you could coach, including being a defensive coordinator at one point in his career. So I guess you could do that. My guess is that they will have someone on that lower end of the rung of coaches kind of take over things, but, or maybe you like put the running backs in a receivers meeting room or something. I don't know. Like I don't think you want like a GA running backs meetings while you're trying to get through spring practice. So, but the on-field stuff, they have options, but it is odd. Like it's not, you know, the end of the world, I suppose, that they have to figure this out, but it is a very strange dichotomy here, or situation here, I guess, that Ohio State doesn't have a running backs coach as it enters the second week of spring practice.
And it's at least telling, I imagine, that right now it doesn't seem like any of those, that first choice or second choice that Ryan Day had in mind when this went down on Wednesday, there's been no like immediate movement. So I would think that people who are looking for some sense of where the decision is trending, like it looks like it's going away from Robert Gillespie, who was like the main guy that we talked about last week, as they start to figure this out. But the Stan Drayton stuff continues to pick up some steam. There's a lot of other guys out there, as we talked about all week last week after this happened. Like, this is a position that a lot of people around the country are going to be interested in filling. And so Ryan Day has the opportunity throughout this week, I think, to really buckle down and get some interviews done. I wouldn't expect that we know the answer to this for probably at least another week. You think?
I'm going to set an arbitrary deadline. I don't know. I think by the end of this week, you have to have a solution. You're going to be at that point already approaching the midpoint of camp. There'll be this key scrimmages looming after that. We talked about maybe that Ohio State wouldn't rush and just take the very first person or drop the very largest bag possible to make sure that no one could ever say no to that position. I think it's smart to field the interest and see who's out there. And Ryan Day's talked about that with other spots on his staff, trying to find the right person who fits in with the staff. And, you know, that includes personalities. It includes your recruiting chops. It includes your knowledge of scheme and development of running backs. All of that is included. And I'd be totally on board with the fact that that didn't have to happen in the first 3 days or by Tuesday to go out there and be ready for practice number three and immediately take over for Tony Alford. But I think if you get past next Saturday with a week and a half to go into some of those negotiations and knowing who you already think most of the top candidates are and what their level of interest may be, maybe it won't happen by Saturday, but I would be pretty surprised if they got through this week and didn't have an answer one way or another from somebody.
Maybe Dusty May can do it.
He's probably looking for another opportunity.
They did lose to Temple, by the way, to tie it all together.
Stan Drayton,
Temple Hoops.
Back to Stan Drayton. Okay.
There you go.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see. There's a lot of factors for everybody. It's not just sometimes maybe we can be guilty of oversimplifying it. It's like, look at Ohio State's running backs. Look at the power of the brand. Look at, you know, how much money they can offer. Like, this should be easy. Everybody's going to take it. But even when it comes to somebody like Gillespie at Alabama, like, even if the money's close, I understand, like, there can be family concerns, similar to what led to Bill O'Brien going to Boston. Like, you know, there are other things that are involved, and that person is making decisions that aren't based purely on just what, you know, the fantasy football of it all. That's like, this should be easy. Everybody should want it. Well, they do, but that doesn't ensure that they're going to take it either.
Yeah, it's not like any of us would be willing to just move across the country in 2 days and take it. Like, to do something like that would require a lot of logistics to be figured out and quickly. And
what are you offering? Tell me what the offer. I'll tell you whether or not I'll go.
He told
$15 and a
table. He told Allie last week he was going to move back to Phoenix.
That's the dream. But I think the interesting thing here is that a guy like Drayton, who is a sitting head coach right now, like, that opportunity is interesting to me, because Ryan Day, I believe part of what he really wanted with this position initially was to get younger. But you're going to see a lot of these mid-major head coaches looking to do what Chip Kelly did and find a way to maybe take some of that pressure off of themselves and just get back to coaching ball. And clearly the Big Ten and the SEC right now stand head and shoulders above the rest of college football as far as the prestige as far as the money, as far as where the sport is going. And so I almost think that if Stan Drayton were really interested in that, like, it may be too hard to pass that up if you're Ohio State. I mean, aside from the fact that he coached Ezekiel Elliott, he also recruited and coached Bijan Robinson. Like, the two guys that if you went around the country and asked, there's probably three running backs, if you went around the country and asked in the last like 10 years, ask every high school running back, who are the guys you really watched and look up to? And they would say Ezekiel Elliott, Saquon Barkley, and Bijan Robinson. And Stan Drayton recruited and developed two of those guys. And that there's still a lot of power in that. So it would be interesting to me to see if Stan's really interested in taking that step or not, because it seems like the opportunity at Temple might be short-lived from here because their program stinks. So like there's some interesting discussions mm-hmm. that have to take place between now and, I agree, like Friday of this week, where by the time we head into week three of camp, this needs to be settled.
Well, and I think even from that perspective, the finances in have to be weighed with Stan Drayton. He is a sitting head coach. He's under contract. Does Temple want to just rip it up and say, well, that's okay, you want to go be a running backs coach again, we're fine to go hire a new head coach in March? Like, if he has a couple years left and a couple $1 million per year, like, there's going to be more than
like two and a half.
Yeah. There's going to be more involved likely than just Ohio State offering $850,000 to Stan Drayton and be like, you know what, you're going to take a little less money, but you get to do this again. Like, I don't think it would be that simple, and it would be more expensive. And can Ohio State afford to pay that with all of the money in the program and what's coming from the broadcast deals? Of course they can. Is that what they want to do?
They're getting some bounce back from not having to pay Holtman's whole $13.5 million, right?
That's true. They got a great coupon discount there from Chris Holtman. But yeah. Again, I'm not saying that to throw water on the idea that Stan Drayton could be Ohio State's next running backs coach, because I think there is legitimate interest on both sides. I'm saying that just like there was with Gillespie, it may not be as simple and straightforward as this guy wants it. Ohio State also thinks that he would be a good running backs coach. Cool. Let's shake hands and move forward. Stan Drayton is probably more complicated on the face of it than hiring someone from Alabama or Oklahoma.
Yeah. And it would be, I think the odds would probably be against Ohio State convincing two guys to take less money and leave a head coaching job in one offseason, right?
You know what I mean? What if you're not the one doing the convincing? That's what I'm trying to get at. I think a guy like Drayton might be in a situation where it's like, yeah, you can just ride it out and get fired at the end of this season and maybe take a couple $1 million as a buyout, or you can walk away and say, hey, I'm done with this. This isn't working, and I'm going to go back to my roots. I mean, I think that there's an argument both ways, but yeah, it's not like it's like this is the guy. So it's not that sort of situation. And I think we'll see and hear through the grapevine this week half a dozen names of people that Ryan Day actually interviews this week. So it's going to be a pretty busy week.
It is going to be a busy week. I'm excited to go back into the Woody Hayes Athletic Center. There are a couple practices. Maybe we'll get to watch some if Jerry Emig and Ryan Day decide to go against Bill Landis's initial suggestion at the start of spring to lock us out. There is Pro Day for Ohio State on Wednesday. So looking forward to seeing I don't know who's going to throw to Marvin Harrison Jr. on Pro Day. So that adds a little intrigue. But Bill's going to throw. All right. Well, Berm usually likes to fight for that opportunity, loves to pick up the pigskin and fire it around with the Buckeyes, and he's trying to get back into the NFL. Good graces. I don't know how, but we'll see what happens there. Tuesdays, Thursdays, there's going to be interviews. I believe Ohio State's working towards a scrimmage on Saturday. We won't, I'm pretty sure, be watching that one, but there's going to be a ton of coverage and maybe even a running backs coach and some conversation of that as we get through this week ahead. So thanks for starting with us here on the Podcast Daily for Monday. For Bill and Berm, I'm Austin. We will talk to you later.